speech and extend my welcome to all the nerds here this evening. You're very welcome. And now we move back across to the proposition, and it's my great pleasure to call upon Professor Ron Dymer to continue the case of his side.
Accustomed to this form of debating. Just a bit of biographical background. I grew up in a working class neighborhood in Canada, East Vancouver, where we didn't engage in this kind of back and forth, all the sorts of formalities we have here. We settled our debates either on the ice or with fisticuffs. So this is relatively new to me, but if we can change the rules, I would be in favor of that. I guess not.
You're just a country boy.
Just a country
boy. Rough old history.
Exactly, yes. A new tux. I must say that I do believe the proposition. I believe it firmly in my heart. I believe the internet is indeed the great leveler. And I think when we talk about how the internet may be a force for democratization, I think we first need to clarify what type of democracy we're talking about. Because there are actually many different models of democracy. Not all of them are supported by the internet. In fact, the internet is a force against some forms of democracy. Representative democracy, for example, socialist democracy. The type of democracy it is in favor of, I think, is mass participatory democracy. And that's not necessarily a good thing to everyone. We tend to associate democracy with being inherently a good thing. But there are all sorts of things related to democracy and that the internet promotes that not everyone will find necessarily beneficial or wonderful. It promotes wonderful things like access to Wikipedia, but at the same time, all of my students love to take their essays directly from Wikipedia, plagiarize, and hand them in to me. It promotes the Paris Hiltons of the world, hooligans of all sorts, Al-Qaeda has talked about, and so on. So when we talk about the internet being a force for democratization, we have to be clear-headed about this and understand what it is precisely that we talk about and understand exactly what the consequences of democracy are when it comes to the internet. Now, I actually think the best way to argue the case for the proposition is by looking at those who despise democracy, who do not like democracy, and because of that find the internet threatening in some way. And in this respect, much of my argumentation overlaps with what some of my colleagues will say on the other side. But I actually think, in doing this, they are actually proving their case wrong. Because when we look at those who are against the internet, because they are against democratization, we see that the internet is actually a very powerful force that threatens a lot of social forces. Let me give you one example. This is one area where the extreme right and the extreme left both agree. Straussian political theorists, on the one hand, conservative political theorists, and theorists of the Frankfurt School all see democracy, and by extension, the internet, as threatening to their protected spheres of knowledge. And I might say the same would apply to Harvard Yard brainiacs, who like to see protected spheres of knowledge, little walled gardens, as something that applies only to the establishment. And when they see people applying their spheres of knowledge to tools like Wikipedia, they find it threatening to the institutions with which they so jealously guard. But there are other areas where I think, from the research that I do, that I can say that there is lots of evidence where institutions around the world, especially states, who dislike democracy, find the internet threatening are taking active steps to work against it. And our research is ripe with such evidence. And I've heard some stories just over dinner today of what it is that I'm talking about. Let me give you one example. In Burma, where my respected friend is from and is going to speak in in a few moments. I just learned that so threatened by the internet is the Burmese regime, because they're so threatened by democracy, that if you own a laptop, you can go to jail for as much as 15 years, or worse. And in fact, the Burmese government went so far recently, just within the last couple of weeks, burned an entire neighborhood of houses looking for laptops. Right? In the Open Net Initiative's research, we talk extensively, we provide detailed evidence of how states are trying to block access to information. Why are they doing this? Because they find the internet so threatening to their established spheres of authority. Now, I wonder if my colleagues in the Open Net Initiative would want to deny their own findings. They want to retract what it is that they're talking about. They want to withdraw from the Open Net Initiative altogether. Personally, I don't understand why you would argue against your own findings, but there it is. These governments find the internet threatening because it is a force for democratization and it threatens their establishment. It's not just my colleagues in the Open Net Initiative. A respected lawyer told me earlier, just as we were walking out, related to the anecdote, how the person that he represents in Russia, his life is threatened. His very life is threatened. Why? Because he contributed funds to internet education. If the internet weren't a force for democratization, why would this regime want to kill your own client?
Sir, Middle Eastern monarchies have feared democracy since the foundation 50 years ago. They've succeeded in managing representative governments and gerrymandering them for their own purposes, in buying it off. Do you think that just because you fear something, that means that it's effective in the solution to the problem?
Not necessarily. And I'm glad you brought it up because it leads me to my next point.
Just a country lawyer.
I am one of the developers of a tool called Cyclone. I'm the lead developer of a tool called Cyclone. And the other developers alongside of me who created this tool did it with very small resources. Let me tell you a bit about this tool. This tool allows people in uncensored countries like Canada, the United States, the United Kingdom, to install this small application on their computer. Once it's installed, they give the connection information to a few friends or family members that they know and trust, who live in now more than 26 countries worldwide that censor the internet. And the people in those countries connect to this little program, and it allows them to evade these filters as if they weren't even there. So in as much as governments are trying to control the internet, citizens are able, because of the nature of the internet itself, the properties of the I've heard enough of it all day. You'll get your chance. Citizens are able to evade these filters as if they weren't there. Now think about this for a moment. This is a very powerful tool. So powerful is it. I'm a Canadian. Okay? First of all. My own security and intelligence service tried to infiltrate my lab, so threatened were they by this tool. The Canadian government. The front page of Canada's national newspaper, the Globe and Mail, had a picture of me and my colleagues and said, "These guys are bringing down the Great Firewall of China." Us. Me. Precisely my point. If me, a humble guy from East Vancouver, I barely made it past high school. I don't know. The thing of me getting into the Oxford Oxford Student Union debates and so on, if I can be here doing this, bringing down the Great Firewall of China with this small little tool that we created, doesn't that say something about the power of internet?